be found at BigStirRecords.com. And me, the Moxster, you can always just email me because you can't find me on the social medias. You can email me at WRCTRequest@gmail.com. Oh, speaking of the social medias, yeah. Those the label, the 4019s, they're on the Instas and the Facebooks and the Twitter, so you can find them there as well. But I actually need to wrap up, but I do have one more song to play off of your latest release, New Roaring Twenties, conveniently titled Time Marches On, because indeed it does, not just with life, but with this interview and this radio show as well. So, Nick, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day to chat with me. And I want to remind all of the listeners out there that the 4019s have three upcoming shows. Friday, August 26th, out in Beaver, playing with Joe Grushecki and the House Rockers at Beaver Station. And then on Saturday, the 27th, they're in New Brighton playing Woolly Bullies, and that's a 5 p.m. outdoor show. It sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. And speaking of fun, what's more fun than playing Stage E at a Steeler pregame tailgate party? Yeah, before the Steelers take on the Lions down on the North Shore, they'll be playing Stage AE. So three great chances to check out the 4019s. My name is Paul. I am the Moxster. And again, Nick, I appreciate your time and look forward to seeing you soon.
Okay, Paul, thanks a lot. And everybody at Viva La Mock, appreciate you guys sticking with us. And we enjoy listening to you every Friday night, brother.
I went down to the liquor store. I saw a face and I couldn't be sure. Is that you? Oh, friend, is that you? We rode our bikes on the streetlights. Kissed the girls and got in the fights. Is that you? Oh, friend, is that you?
Hey, this is Nick Z from the 4019s. You're listening to my man, the Moxster, on WRCT, Carnegie Mellon.
Teachers shape the future. Right now, in a classroom somewhere in the United States, there's a teacher inspiring a future scientist who'll make preventing pandemics their life's work. Sharpening the mind of an aspiring environmentalist who'll help combat climate change. And generating possibilities for a student who'll be the first in their family to graduate college. Explore a career that leaves a legacy you can be proud of. Teach. Learn more and receive free support at teach.org.
What kind of family she wanted. She said, a family like yours.
Learn more about adopting a teen at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
From the faint, do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Well, my friends, Joe Biden is doing it. Joe Biden will be canceling up to $20,000 in student loan debt for those making under $125,000. It'll be $10,000 for most folks, but there's a Pell Grant element to it, which could raise that to $20,000. We're going to look at the details. And I have to tell you, producer Pat was completely correct in his prediction. Producer Pat has been predicting on the award-winning bonus show that at a time advantageous to Democrats for the midterm elections, Joe Biden would do some larger student loan forgiveness than he has done so far. Now, remember that Joe Biden has already done, even before this, more student loan forgiveness than any other president. And we've covered that before. And Pat said it's going to be close-ish to the November midterms. Joe Biden's going to do something. And I just didn't think he was. And here we are. Producer Pat, completely correct. New York Times reporting, Biden to cancel $10,000 in student debt. Low-income students are eligible for more. The plan would be $10,000 in cancellation for those earning under $125,000 a year and $20,000 for those who received Pell Grants for low-income families. Now, the debt forgiveness is less than what some Democrats have been pushing for, and we will talk about that. Biden also announced that a pandemic-era pause on student loan payments, which has been in effect since March of 2020, will expire at the end of the year. There is not yet an application process. This has been a big question. Okay, so how do we get the forgiveness if we qualify? What's the process? That process has not yet been made specific. A couple of other important notes here. Students who receive Pell Grants will be able to get up to $20,000 in forgiveness. About 60% of borrowers have Pell Grants, and the majority come from families earning under $30,000 a year. The Education Department estimates 27 million borrowers will qualify for up to $20,000 in relief. Then you've got millions more who will be able to get the $10,000. And there are a number of other repayment modifications that are being made as well. So let's go through some of the different reactions to this, and then we're going to delve further into it. So one reaction is this is not enough. $10,000 is not enough. $20,000 is not enough. Fine. But this is already overwhelmingly more than any other president has done by far. So as I've said before, I tend to evaluate presidents based on what they do, generally speaking, and also for things they promised to do but don't do. I think both are fair game. Just saying, well, this president's bad because he didn't do these 10 things that he never promised to do, that seems to be a way to end up with relatively meaningless evaluations of presidents. So when you look at what Joe Biden has done, he has by far forgiven more student debt than any other president. Counterpoint. Joe Biden's only doing this to help Democrats in November. Well, I mean, listen, everything politicians do to some degree is to help themselves. Is it also good for people? And the answer is this is very good for people. And there are also some new rules for income-based repayment plans, which are arguably as big of a deal as the forgiveness. Repayment will be capped at 5% of discretionary income rather than 10. That's a big source of relief. Your payments are zero if you are below 225% of the federal poverty line. due to an increase in the non-discretionary fraction of income. Unpaid interest is waived as long as you're making monthly payments, even if the payments are zero based on those earlier guidelines that I mentioned. And that's really a game changer. Many people are much more able to pay off a debt if they're not accumulating and accruing more and more and more interest through the payment process. And that's a really big deal. And then forgiveness after 10 years on loans under $12,000 rather than only $20,000, which is another interesting provision. So there is a significant amount of relief here in addition to the forgiveness component for lower and middle income borrowers. And that's a really, really big deal. Now, one question is, what does this do in terms of Democrat chances going into the November midterms? As we have talked about before, right now in the House of Representatives, I'm sorry, in the Senate, the odds for Democrats have crept up from a 52% shot at holding the Senate to 55, high 50s, 60, and now 64%. Right now, the 538 estimate, the forecast is that Democrats have a 64% chance of retaining control of the Senate. We will see whether that number increases on the basis of this announcement from Joe Biden. In terms of the House of Representatives, well, Republicans are still favored to hold, but by a smaller margin than at any previous point during this cycle. Right now, Republicans are down to a 78% chance of taking the House of Representatives, Democrats at 22%. Still, the most likely outcome is Democrats keep the Senate but lose the House. But the House numbers are looking, it's hard to call them good for Democrats, but they are looking the least bad that they have looked since we've started following this election cycle. So this is another major, major accomplishment by Joe Biden. Later on in the show, I am going to now compare and contrast the 180 that has taken place for the Biden administration, which is truly remarkable. I mean, if you look at the Biden administration 2 months ago and now, it is truly stunning, the change that we have seen. We're going to talk about that, and we're going to contrast that with what's going on the Republican side, including a growing civil war, wherein former President Donald Trump is calling for the removal of Mitch McConnell as the Senate minority leader. It could not be a greater contrast than what we are seeing. That'll come up a little bit later. I want to address now one of the most common arguments that the right is making against the student loan debt forgiveness. This is unfair to people who already paid off their student loans or don't have student loans. This is the argument that many right-wingers are now making. Well, whatever you can say about the merits of helping people who currently have student loan debt, it's very unfair to those who don't have student loan debt or to those who worked hard to pay off their student loan debt already. Joe Biden yesterday during a press conference that he gave, took questions at the end of a statement, I guess is a better way to say it, was asked about this. What about the people who paid off their student loans?
Mr. President, is this unfair to people who paid their student loans or chose not to take out loans?
Is it fair to people who, in fact, do not own multi-billion dollar businesses? They see why these guys give them all a tax break? Is that fair? What do you think?
What about people who paid their loans, though, struggle to pay their loans and now others don't have to?
All right. So that's Peter Ducey there at the end yelling out a question. So let's talk about that. I paid off my student loans. I had student loans. I could have waited. I don't care if Joe Biden forgives everybody else's loans. First of all, this is good for the economy. It's demand side stimulus. When people aren't paying interest to big mega lenders, that money they then have to put into their local economy, small businesses. Maybe they can get a David Pakman Show membership now because they don't have to funnel that money into these mega financial corporations. So it's good for the economy, and I like things that are good for the economy. So could I have waited and taken a chance that someday maybe Joe Biden would or someone would pay off some, forgive some student loans, and maybe I would be under the income limit, but maybe I would not? Sure, I could have done that, but I didn't. And it's just not a problem for me. But here's the other thing. The people that already paid off their student loans, yes, they don't get the forgiveness, but they freed up money for other things much sooner. So I get it. You went through the struggle of paying off your student loans 3 years ago, and now you're missing out on 10K, possibly 20K. But 3 years ago, you were able to redirect the money that had and would have been going to your student loans, if you're relatively financially competent, to savings, to building an emergency fund, to starting a retirement account, to contributing to low-cost index funds, or whatever. So it's not like you just lost because you paid off your loans and now there's forgiveness. You have freed up that money to do other things with during the intervening time to improve your financial position. So it's a very silly argument. Now, you can take this idea and apply it to almost anything. I mean, listen, it would be unfair if Republicans were to now cut taxes, because look at all these people who for all these years paid a higher tax rate. Well, that doesn't really make sense. They never make that argument. I'm talking now as me, David. I didn't get a federal tax credit for my electric vehicle, but now they're putting in new tax credits for electric vehicles. That's not fair to me. Well, yeah, it's okay. Life's not always necessarily fair, but I got my vehicle earlier. Rather than burning gas for the last 3 years waiting for the credit, I've had an electric vehicle and I've reduced my fueling expense. I mean, come on. Yeah, I saw on Twitter, every black person should still have to be a slave because it's not fair to the former slaves. I mean, it's an absurd thing, right? We're expanding it into absurd arguments, but it's more or less the principle I saw on Reddit. Would it be unfair to the people that the trolley has already killed to divert it now to prevent it from killing more people? That's a trolley problem, one. So those are all terrible criticisms. Now, here is a good criticism. And again, it's a criticism, but we're talking about different things. Here is a fair assessment of what the forgiveness does not do.
I guess what I find annoying about it is that it doesn't address the higher education cartel, and it basically is infusing money into a higher education system that is basically just corrupt at this point. You look at how much tuition has just skyrocketed over the last 20, 30 years. I mean, my college tuition, it's three times today what it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's just absurd. And it doesn't do anything. That's not accessible for the majority of Americans.
So that's absolutely true. That's MSNBC analyst Elise Jordan. And she correctly points out this doesn't address the skyrocketing cost of college. It doesn't do that. And that's why Joe Biden and others have said, well, we should have free community college. Start putting in place lower cost competition to the higher education cartel to put some downward pressure on prices. That's absolutely accurate. This doesn't do that. This is debt relief. It's not an institutional reform. They're both related to education, but they are independent issues. And what should be done next is we need to figure out how to deal with the pricing issue. Absolutely. This doesn't fix that. But that doesn't mean the forgiveness is a bad idea. So some real brain rot happening on the right-wingers, on the brains of right-wingers in the United States as a result of this. I think part of what's going on is they realize this is very bad for them in November. And after the break, we're going to talk about that. I want to remind you that next Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern time, we are going to be doing our first in a really long time members-only town hall. We've done monthly town halls open to everybody, and we're going to continue doing those. This Wednesday, we're doing a member-only town hall, which it will be streamed live. Anybody who wants to watch it is welcome to, but only joinpacman.com members will be welcome to call in and chat with me. Okay, so sign up at joinpacman.com. That town hall coming up Wednesday, August 31st at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. It's going to be a good one. So predictably, Republicans, right-wing media, extremists on the right, authoritarians, the usual suspects, are furious about the student loan debt forgiveness that Joe Biden is doing. Now, this is another great accomplishment for Joe Biden. And in the next story, I'm actually going to go through the incredible two-month 180, arguably one of the greatest turnarounds in a presidency, certainly that I've covered, and I would argue in decades in the United States. But before we get to that, one of the real reasons that Republicans are melting down and panicking over Joe Biden's student loan debt forgiveness that was announced yesterday is that on some level they realize 43 million people directly benefit, and then their families, their spouses, their parents who might be helping with the payment, whoever, the children, everybody benefits indirectly as well. And Republicans realize that this could be really bad for them in the November midterms, but they have nothing else to do than to make outrageous claims about why this is bad. Well, this is unfair to people who have paid their student loans. We talked about that in the last segment. This is a handout. This teaches people they don't have to be financially responsible or whatever else the case may be. And part of what's happening is they know this is very bad for them. Let's look at a couple of examples of this. Here's Fox News propagandist Tucker Carlson, whose lawyers have argued in court that he's not really doing news, he's doing entertainment, and nothing he says should really be taken seriously. That's a legal defense to Tucker Carlson's program. Tucker Carlson says that the student debt relief is a form of reparations being paid to drug-addicted robots who have no job prospects. Wow.
So when Joe Biden announced today that he plans to cancel some of that debt, the obvious response would be to celebrate the announcement. But we didn't right away.
Oh.
Instead, we paused to learn the details about what he was proposing. That's a habit we've picked up from watching people like Joe Biden in action over the past several years. It's always worth reading the fine print. These are the very same people, after all, who decided it was a good idea somehow to defund the police. They're the ones.
Okay, now remember, they haven't defunded the police. And as far as Joe Biden's concerned, he has nothing to do with police funding. I mean, it's just neither here nor there. It's a complete non sequitur.
You forced the entire American population to take an experimental COVID vaccine, even when it became obvious that it didn't work. These are the people who sent.
Okay, and again, there's so much to that. The initial vaccine against the initial variant was extremely effective at preventing infection. Over time, its ability to prevent infection diminished, but its ability to prevent serious COVID death and hospitalization was still good. I mean, all of these one-line lies require some time to unpack, but really this is about the student loan debt forgiveness.
Crack pipes to crack addicts, the ones who think 16-year-olds should vote in presidential elections, the ones who screamed at you about how Ukraine's borders are sacrosanct, but yours are racist, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. These are people, in other words, with a long and public track record of very bad ideas, extraordinarily bad ideas. Ideas so stupid, you couldn't make them up.
Hmm.
So the question is this idea different? We want it to be, but unfortunately it's not. And here's how you know it's not. Colleges aren't refunding any of the loan money. You are. But wait, you say, I didn't defraud anyone. I didn't claim that a degree in post-colonial liberation studies from Wesleyan would be worth anything. I didn't take 80 grand a year from middle-class families in order to turn their children into Xanax-addicted robots with no job prospects.
Well, listen, these are just Xanax-addicted robots with no job prospects. They don't deserve the student loan forgiveness. Now, there's so many different ways to respond to this. And as we've talked about earlier, it's good for the economy for money to be going back into real businesses rather than just interest on student loans paid to mega financial corporations, which people like Tucker Carlson often criticize. But there's a bigger picture here, which is Tucker correctly points out we have a broken higher education system. The other day, I was calculating, what was it? I was calculating based on how much my girlfriend's alma mater's tuition went up from when she graduated to now. We were calculating that when our daughter would be 18, it would be $203,000 a year if just it kept growing at the same rate. Like, obviously something has to break. It's a completely broken system. Tucker's correctly identifying that. And you know what? I have even said before, there should be some consideration based on your major whether the cost of the education is worthwhile, right? I mean, when I think about any expense, I think about what's the value. And if you're going into a field where you are unlikely to really make money, then it's perfectly fair to consider whether the cost of the education makes sense. There's a whole bunch of things that go into that. But again, this idea of the recipients aren't deserving is just it's the same way they talk about any welfare program. And it's a very broken and disturbing way to talk about it. Now, a couple other examples of this. Here is Dan Bongino talking to Jesse Waters on Fox News. He says that the student loan debt forgiveness is evidence of the collapse of America.
Still trying to get over this whole thing because, listen, Jesse, if you were doing a tutorial on what the collapse of great empires look like,
yeah,
just pick up your phone, start the video camera, because this is exactly what it looks like, and just leave it running. This is the movie. This is the autobiography of the American empire collapsing before our very eyes.
Yep. $10K of student loan forgiveness for those making under $125,000 and $20K for Pell Grant recipients. That's the end of American civilization. Now, of course, the counterpoints are just about every country in Western and Northern Europe, where they are flourishing, they are good business environments, people have healthcare, the healthcare is good, education is good, quality of life is good, life expectancy is good, and in many cases, they have college education paid through taxation. Now, here, government money for the forgiveness means it's taxpayer money. That's absolutely true. And it's really no different than the taxpayer money directly paying for the education. In this case, it didn't directly pay for it. Now it's going to be part of the forgiveness. It's not the indication of a collapsing empire. Many of the best countries in the world to live in have education paid for through taxation. Now, one more Bongino clip. Here he is. It's more kind of like lazy, like these people, everybody's lazy, according to Bongino.
What's happening here really has me a little annoyed because there's this thing, an income repayment program. You know what it's called? It's called a freaking job. And here's how this works, a job. There's this thing. Let me just do a demo for you all at home.
Yeah. Okay.
There's this thing you have. It's called the ass right here. The ass, okay? And when the ass gets up out of the seat and goes to work, and you remove the ass from the seat, you get this thing. It's a four-letter word called a job. Some of you know Joe Biden will get the joke. You get the job, and then you pay back the loan.
Okay. So, first of all, right-wingers think that that's like a thinker. They believe Bongino's a thinker. Now, aside from the lazy narrative just being, it's a lazy narrative, quite frankly. It's lazy to just do the lazy narrative. A lot of the people, I don't know how old he is, but a lot of the people who say, just work and pay for school, that's all. When they were in school, relative to income, college was exponentially cheaper. It was orders of magnitude cheaper. The relationship, in fact, Tom Hartman has talked about on his program how his wife Louise, if I recall correctly, basically waitressed to pay for college. The idea now that you could work like in food service to pay for college is absurd because the relationship between the cost of college and the minimum wage and the median wage has gotten completely out of whack. So these people don't know what they're talking about, but they're certainly trying to make you think that they do. All right. The Joe Biden presidency has done a complete 180. It is stunning the degree to which the Biden presidency has turned around. Think back to 2.5 or so months ago. No major recent accomplishments for Joe Biden. Approval rating in Trump's favorite place in the toilet, the third element of the bathroom. Not looking good for November. The reelection of Joe Biden, a seeming impossibility based on the direction things were going. But then we started to put together a bunch of different things that took place. And from further back, we had, of course, getting out of Afghanistan, which was an absolutely fantastic decision. Did it go perfectly? No, it went about as well as it would have if Trump had done it. But we're out of Afghanistan. We now have Joe Biden's student loan forgiveness package, which is a major deal, and I believe will absolutely help Democrats in November. We had an incredible July jobs report. About 250,000 jobs were expected. More than 500,000 jobs were actually created. Wages are up. Inflation is down. Gas prices have been steadily coming down and significantly. We've had the PACT Act signed. The Inflation Reduction Act has been signed. We've got the older infrastructure bill, which Biden did. And then on the other side, look at what's happening for the right wing. The revelations from the January 6th committee, disastrous, disastrous for Trump and people around him. Completely bonkers MAGA nominees. We'll talk about Laura Loomer after the break. Just cartoonish nuts running. Herschel Walker, Doug Mastriano, all these people. Roe v. Wade overturned, something the right has wanted for so long. Absolutely horrifying. Trump busted with documents at his house. And now we learned the number of documents is in the hundreds, and it's all completely crazy. And meanwhile, the Republican civil war is growing, wherein Donald Trump is now calling for the removal and replacement of Mitch McConnell as the Republican leader in the Senate. Currently, the Senate minority leader probably will remain in the minority after the November midterms. What an incredible turnaround for Joe Biden, and what an incredible contrast to what's going on the Republican side. No policy ideas. They haven't had policy ideas for years. Remember the health care plan that was weeks from coming out in the summer of 2020? And then we never got the health care plan. It's because there is no health care plan. No policy. Just get in the way of Democrats. That's it. The Civil War. The absolutely brazen nature with which they just lie and lie and lie and tell the same lies over and over again, including about the 2020 election. There could be no greater contrast right now, but the contrast alone wouldn't be that notable. The 2-month turnaround of the Biden presidency has been stunning. Now, will it make a difference in November? Because it looks like Democrats probably will keep the Senate but lose the House. Can something different happen in the House? If Democrats were able to keep the House and Senate in November, it would be historic, given what normally happens in midterms after a new party takes the White House. Incredible. Let me know your thoughts. And all the clips we played in these segments will be on our Instagram if you want to check them out. Search Instagram for David Pakman Show. And also find me on Instagram at David.Pakman. Check out some of my pictures from the last week in Canada, and I will tell some stories on the bonus show about that as well. So we have to have a conversation about something not so good that's happening on the, I guess I would call it the online left media, in the online left media world, which is a level of pettiness that at this point should concern every single one of us that actually wants to get some things done and make some progress. And maybe not see Democrats completely crushed in the November midterm elections. And what I'm talking about is a very toxic subculture that's taking place among many in the audience of shows like mine, in which there is just a completely counterproductive, self-destructive argumentation happening constantly about which show is better. Who's a shill? This show's bad. That show's bad. Pakman's terrible. This, that, the other thing. And the reason that I sort of came across this is a couple people sent me over the last few days as I was getting back from my trip, some links to some of subreddit discussions and Discord discussions where my name comes up in the context of, am I one of the good guys or am I one of the bad guys? Why am I terrible? And you can find lots of reasons why I'm terrible, including I'm terrible because my YouTube titles are clickbait, or because I'm not doing enough deep foreign policy analysis, or because, you know, I have a bonus show.
Oh, the bonus show where you want to make money, but everybody else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
Or whatever. And this stuff is all happening supposedly among people on the left who share like 95% of the same goals. So let's just sort of like start at the middle and work our way out. But, right. So like, let's take the criticism. My show is bad because I do this type of show and not that type of show. I don't do deep foreign policy analysis. Listen, every show has a different niche and a different goal. The point of this show is to be a popularizer of being informed, of thinking about how political choices impact the world we live in, to be a show that inspires people to actually at minimum vote, if not do more, which nearly half the country doesn't do, and to warn people about the horrifying reality of the scourge that is right-wing extremism and reactionary politics and authoritarianism, and to make sure everybody remembers this is not a both-sides situation in the United States. We really have one side that is completely out of their mind and another side that's just not quite left enough for me. And those are two very different things. We talk to interesting, smart people from different fields to expose people in the audience to the fact that all of these different fields exist. And if one of them piques your interest, then you can do deep dives into that. Find books, find podcasts to deep dive into any particular topic that interests you. Create a community of like-minded people to come together through the show itself and our Discord and our subreddit and all these different things. And then you can say, well, I really care about education. So in addition to listening to the Pac-Man podcast, I'll listen to podcasts about education, for example, or I care about climate change. So I'll add some climate YouTubers, climatologist YouTubers to my subscriptions or whatever. And that is really the point of this particular show. So yes, this is not a show that is exclusively long form foreign policy analysis. That doesn't mean that this show is any better or any worse than a different show. Now, yes, different shows have different levels of production quality. Different shows have different levels of, experience for the hosts or whatever the case may be. But this sniping thing that I see so many people in my audience and in other audiences engage in about, oh, Sam Cedar's bad because of his view on this one issue, or TYT is good, better than Pac-Man because of this, or Pac-Man show is... This is extraordinarily petty and self-destructive, and the right doesn't do this. The right does a lot of horrible things, which we criticize, but the right just looks at, are these people basically helping our movement, or are they basically hurting our movement? Is this someone who we mostly agree with? And that's kind of the starting point. And unfortunately, I continue to worry that this level of pettiness and sniping on the left is going to be very, very bad for the movement. Apply the analogy to books, right? I don't read political memoirs. I didn't read, Obama's book.
Obama!
I didn't read the Kushner book. I didn't read Hillary's book. I just have other things I prefer to read. It doesn't mean that as a genre, the political memoir is bad. I mean, some are bad, some are poorly written. It's a niche and there's a need for it, and that's great. But it would be weird for me to say, well, I think narrative nonfiction is better than political memoirs. How do you even compare those things? And so let's all take a step back. Let's understand who is generally advocating for the right things, the things that we believe in, the things that will improve the country and the world in which we live. And let's not inflict this kind of circular firing squad of self-inflicted damage. It's just very bad. And pettiness is really the best way that I can describe it. Let me know what you think. I have to tell you, I don't normally take great pleasure in this type of thing, but I took great pleasure in lunatic Republican Laura Loomer sobbing while claiming that the election was stolen from her by a Republican. We're going to look at the video in a moment. It is really something else. If you're not familiar with Laura Loomer, Laura Loomer was a far-right congressional candidate. She was running first and foremost in Florida in a primary against Daniel Webster. Okay? She ran a primary against Daniel Webster, and she lost the primary. This is Florida's 11th congressional district. Laura Loomer, 29 years old, complete and total extremist, and she lost. And she just lost. There's really nothing else to it. This is a Republican stronghold district. The Republican Party has received at least 65% of the vote in the last three elections. In 2020, Loomer won a primary in Florida's 21st district, but was then crushed in what is an unfavorable district. If she had won this week, she probably would have won the general because now she was running in a very conservative district, but Daniel Webster won. And there's this incredible video where she is sobbing and saying fraud cost her the win And I have to tell you that to some degree, I find this absolutely hilarious.
We are losing our country because of big tech election interference. And I am pleading with the Republican Party to please start taking this issue seriously. Please. Because the American people deserve representation. And that's why I ran for Congress in 2020. It's why I ran for Congress in 2022. And it's why I'm going to keep fighting for all of you. I'm never going to.
Yeah. So she's asking Republicans to stop the voter fraud in a Republican primary in a red district completely run by Republicans. So I guess it's really not Democrats that are doing the voter fraud. And of course, if you actually confront them with that and you say, wait, you guys spent the second half of 2020 arguing that it's Democratic voter fraud that's going to result in the theft of an election. And it was the Democratic machine that stole it from Trump and gave it to Biden. But now they lose a Republican primary and they use the exact same series of talking points. So it's Democrats and Republicans. And then they'll say, yeah, it's the Rhino Republicans, the Rhino Republicans, which means Republican in name only. They're not really Republicans. They are just as bad with the voter fraud. So but in 2020, a lot of those rhinos won. But you didn't say there was voter fraud then. No, well, in 2020, it was just the Democrats, but then now it's the Republicans in the primaries. This is absurd. And it is a great thing that Laura Loomer lost. Laura Loomer has promoted mass shooting conspiracies, like, for example, claiming Parkland was staged. The Vegas shooter was ISIS. She claimed a right-winger who was arrested for having illegal weapons was actually Antifa. She described herself as a pro-white nationalist. So I think you get it. This is an absolutely, completely, and totally horrible person. And then she put out a statement on some platform saying she doesn't concede, and it's crazy. She wrote, "I do not concede, and I encourage all of my supporters and all of my voters to not support Daniel Webster and the corrupt establishment RNC and the big tech voter fraud machine that is propping his feeble body up and depriving my constituents of the representation they deserve and need. I'm calling for Daniel Webster to resign because everyone knows he is beyond unfit to serve." You know, I think that's a message I can actually get behind. If Laura Loomer is saying in November in the 11th district, don't go out and vote for Daniel Webster. It's a mostly Republican district. I'm absolutely fine with them staying home. I would never advocate for people not to vote. I think it's not a good thing to tell people don't vote. But if they want to tell their supporters not to vote, I am absolutely all for it. It's hilarious that this is what is going on with Laura Loomer, and deservedly so. Not that Daniel Webster is that much better. He's no beauty, right? To use Donald Trump's phraseology. But Loomer would have been extremely dangerous. It is a great thing that she lost. She lost fair and square. Can Democrats win in the fall by running on maintaining and restoring abortion rights? We have an early signal that suggests the answer, at least in some districts, might be yes. This is a super interesting story. Democrats just won a swing district by focusing on abortion, and that should scare Republicans, writes Philip Elliott for Time magazine. This is a very interesting situation. Now an unexpected echo to yesterday's column. Democrats may not be toast in the House. It's a long shot, but there's a new data point from Tuesday evening that makes it more plausible, sending Republicans in Washington into a late night scramble. How had they gotten a New York special election so wrong? The seat representing New York's 19th congressional district opened in May when Congressman Delgado was appointed lieutenant governor. Obama twice won the Hudson River Valley district before it pivoted to Trump in 2016. And Biden in 2020. It's a swing district. With more than 90% of ballots reported, Democratic nominee Pat Ryan was ahead with 52% of the vote, enough to send him to D.C. through the balance of Delgado's term. Maybe everything isn't entirely terrible for Democrats. Maybe. Both parties nominated mainstream candidates to fill Delgado's seat. They invested in the race. Abortion rights was the primary topic for Democrats and the economy for Republicans. In an almost perfect swing district, the small turnout election favored the Democrat, a county executive from the establishment wing of the party. This comes on the heels of Kansas voters rejecting an amendment to the Kansas Constitution that would have made it easier to further restrict access to abortion. This is very interesting because the conventional wisdom is it's the economy, stupid. If the perception is the economy is good, it's good for whoever is in power. If the perception is the economy is bad, it's good for whoever is out of power. Now, in a mixed administration, a mixed Congress, figuring out, well, who's in can have different interpretations. But putting that aside for a moment, typically, particularly for Democrats, when they run on something like abortion or social issues generally, it's not particularly good. But we have a situation here in this. It's admittedly, it's a special election, but it is like the perfect swing district. The candidate who is a Democrat running on abortion rights won. Is this a sign that maybe November won't be as bad for Democrats as some are predicting in the House? Well, it's a possibility. And we've seen it happen to some degree in Michigan. And at this point in time, with what is it, about 9 weeks until the midterm elections, incredibly, the economy is good. And so you can walk and chew gum at the same time. The messaging should be, look at how great the economy is. And also, these are dangerous infringements on women's rights coming from the Republican Party, coming from the right-wing Supreme Court. And we need to elect some Democrats in order to try to reverse that. And so the question becomes, was the overturning of Roe v. Wade potentially very bad for the Republican Party? We don't know the answer yet. And there are many prognosticators saying it is bad or it's good or it doesn't matter. Well, ultimately, these are just predictions. We won't know until we see the results in November. The right has a playbook that they stick to, and they are confident that it will always work. And the general population's views on a number of different issues, particularly social issues, but some economic issues as well, like should taxes be used on the rich to help the general population? The country has moved to the left on basically every single one of those issues. And in a just and reasonable situation, you would think that at a certain point, that public belief, those public perceptions, those public opinions would be reflected in the way that the results shake out. Now, because of gerrymandering and campaign finance and all these different things, voter suppression from Republicans, all the techniques that we've talked about that they use, it hasn't happened to the degree that it should have. Maybe we will actually see that happen in November. So very good news there out of that New York district. We're going to watch all districts closely, and we're going to watch the polling in the House as we head into November. This is really just getting sad. I have video for you today of an extremely disheveled sounding MyPillow Mike Lindell claiming that every Utah vote is fake in his latest febrile tirade about machines and elections and all these different things.
We're doing a class action lawsuit against all machines.
Okay, so here is Pillow saying nobody's really voting in Utah. It is all completely fabricated.
You know, I believe you have the CCP, the globalists, the uniparty. I believe it's all one just happy family. And we showed it on all the 50 states. You get to Utah where there's no one day election. It's all mail in. It's pure crime. Nobody votes in Utah. Nobody, Brandon. It's all just made up.
So Utah is a state of about 3 million people. 3.1 million people roughly live in Utah. And some of them are adults and some of them are registered to vote. And some of them actually do vote. And the idea that just it's all made up because it's mail-in is completely and totally absurd. Now, I'm actually willing to go further. It's not just that no one votes in Utah. I don't even know that Utah is real. I haven't been there. I've never met anyone from Utah. I know Mitt Romney exists, but do we really know that when he left Massachusetts after being governor, he really went to this place called Utah? We really don't. Now, of course, I'm kidding. But in all seriousness, we have a country where I don't know that I would say half, but a whole bunch of people watch people like Pillow for entertainment purposes only, right? We know he's nuts or very confused or some combination of the two or not with it. And we see it as a complete and total joke. And we watch to ask and to see answered, how far are others willing to go in believing that anything this guy says is based in reality, right? So we exist. These people are so susceptible to being propagandized, and it's just funny to see. The other half of the country, and again, it's not really half. A lot of people just don't pay attention. They have no clue who Pillow is. But you've got another portion that is so susceptible to being tricked and scammed and propagandized by people like Mike Pillow, Alex Jones, all of these different people.
Thank your lucky stars. Every day you're not Dave Pakman.
I know. And it's really an incredible contrast. And it doesn't have to be that way. I promise you, we get emails from all over the world. And, you know, I've been to so many different places and engaged with the political, with political activists and systems. In a lot of countries, people disagree about policy, but you don't have a large portion of the population susceptible to clowns like this guy. You just don't. Nobody falls for it. Tiny, tiny portions of the population fall for it. And the vast majority of the political discourse is sane. Here's one other clip from the Pillow stuff. Mike Lindell is reacting to, it sort of seems like he's lost Steve Bannon. It seems like Steve Bannon is not falling for all of the machine stuff. But Pillow says, no. He secretly still believes all of it.
Everybody knows Steve Bannon, and he always says on his show, I'm not a machine guy now, you know what I mean?
He said that to me yesterday. He said that to me yesterday in the booth. I'm not really a machine guy.
Right. So then we get, he says that, I think, so, deep down, of course he believes the machine's got to go.
But of course.
He doesn't. He's afraid of Dominion or Smartmatic.
Right.
That's what they believe. At the end of the night, everybody, I said, so, Steve, are you a machine guy now? He goes, I'm a machine guy.
Yeah.
We're doing a class action lawsuit against all machines.
Yeah, my espresso machine is currently being deposed. It's crazy. This reminds me a little bit of the Jordan Peterson clip. We looked at this clip in detail because it's so fascinating, where Jordan Peterson said, there aren't really atheists. There are people who claim to be atheists, but deep down, they really aren't. And of course, that type of statement is completely unfalsifiable. If even what people claim to be isn't really what they are, then you can't really actually talk about things like atheism. There's no atheist because even the group that describes themselves that way, they're actually religious deep down. Really, which religion? I don't know. Christianity, I sort of guess. This stuff is absolutely hilarious. And he has a following. And that's maybe the scariest thing about the United States. The Republican Civil War is continuing to ramp up. Donald Trump completely losing it and asking for Mitch McConnell to be removed immediately as the Senate minority leader. And it is a tale of contrasts in the United States in the last 2 months. On the one hand, the Biden administration, with the most stunning 180, a seemingly dying presidency 2.5 months ago, the number of Biden accomplishments is incredible. We talked about it earlier. And on the other hand, look at what is happening in the American right wing. Donald Trump posting on his platform Truth Social just hours ago, the Democrats have Mitch McConnell and his lovely wife, Elaine Coco Chow, over a barrel. He and she will never be prosecuted as per the last paragraphs of this story. As long as he continues to give the radical left the trillions and trillions of dollars that they constantly demand, he was afraid to use the debt ceiling card in order to stop the most expensive waste of money in our country's history to be spent on the Green New Deal, which will only cause one thing, a depression. And then Donald Trump posting a statement that, by the way, Elaine Coco Chow, that's Trump's former Secretary of Transportation, now just attacking her, ridiculing. And then Donald Trump putting out the following statement where he says much of the same things and then adds, these expenditures are something our country can never recover from. Mitch McConnell is not an opposition leader. He is a pawn for the Democrats to get whatever they want. He is afraid of them and will not do what has to be done. A new Republican leader in the Senate should be picked immediately. Listen, I welcome this. I welcome this Republican infighting. It can only help the odds improve for Democrats in the House and in the Senate. Now, it's still bad in the House. Democrats will almost certainly lose the House based on the numbers as of today. If those numbers shift between now and November, we will see that and I will let you know. But I welcome this completely and totally wholeheartedly. I hope that Donald Trump continues to push this. I can't imagine a better infight before the midterms than should we completely get rid of and push out Mitch McConnell, one of the most longstanding and powerful Republicans. When there is a fight between, listen, I like Adam Kinzinger, okay? But he's not like the most well-known Republican. He's not the most powerful Republican. It's great that he came out against Trump. I still disagree with him on most policy. Fine. We're talking about Mitch McConnell here and the growing fight between the MAGA wing and the sort of establishment wing of the Republican Party is absolutely fantastic. And one of the things that could be particularly good about this is that most congressional Republicans, and I mean House and Senate, are going to stand behind Mitch McConnell, but they also aren't likely to publicly oppose Donald Trump. And as long as Trump doesn't come out and say, you have to swear allegiance to me, you have to swear loyalty to me, as long as Trump doesn't do that, they can probably get away with what is an absurd wishy-washy position at the end of the day, which is, well, we stand behind Mitch McConnell, but we also support Trump if he's the nominee or whatever. The dream scenario will be Trump actually demands that more and more Republicans swear some kind of oath of loyalty to Trump and or disavow Mitch McConnell publicly, and it will get really ugly really quickly. Democrats should encourage this, and it is a beautiful thing. We have a voicemail number. That number is 2192-DAVID-P. Here's a very interesting voicemail. Our friend Juan wrote in and talked about his doctor. And he says his doctor has some very particular beliefs, but is a very good doctor. And what do I think about this? Take a listen to this.
Hey, David, it's Juan here. So the only doctor that, in my opinion, is worth a dime or has helped me enough to where I feel better on a day-to-day basis is basically a doctor who believes that Trump will be reinstated.
Okay.
This doctor is a doctor that I have a lot of respect for, a doctor that I'm willing to pay even though I can afford without insurance. A doctor that if I come across some lottery, I would even give him some of my lottery. I find myself in a situation where I have to go along with some of his nonsense because I fear that if I say something that he doesn't like, that I'll lose the only doctor that has actually helped me.
Okay.
Can you believe that we've gotten to the point that we can't even disagree without becoming disagreeable or even losing a friendship?
Listen, as I've said before, when people disagree about what the top tax rate should be, it's not really the type of disagreement that has a huge material impact on most relationships, right? If I think, hey, we should have the top marginal tax rate should go all the way up to 55%, and you believe we should have a flat tax of 18%, they're like, all right, we just disagree. It's not viscerally loaded in the same way that some of these other things are. On the complete other end of the spectrum would be beliefs like, well, the Jews should be killed, right? If you find me a great doctor, but the doctor believes the Jews should be killed, it's going to be hard for me to put that aside and say, listen, I'm just coming in here for, you know, this is my ophthalmologist and not to pick on Rand Paul. And that's it. And then there's a whole bunch of in-between stuff. For me, a doctor who is so delusional that they believe Trump is about to be reinstated, it's hard to imagine that they are completely with it in every other way. Now, there is this, I've talked about this condition before called paraphrenia. And paraphrenia is a mental disorder where there's a very organized and limited system of paranoid delusions. There's no hallucination. the intellect doesn't deteriorate, the personality doesn't deteriorate. So sometimes when you're talking about someone with paranoid delusions and or schizophrenia, you talk to them and they seem like they are not there in every sense. Like you just say, hey, you know, what do you want for dinner tonight? And it's some unintelligible rant and there's personality disorder and there's a breakdown of their ability to socialize and all these different things. Paraphrenia is different, in which sometimes someone has a very, it's almost like a walled off delusional belief. It might be, in this case, Trump's about to be reinstated. Listen, I understand and accept the signs of climate change. I know how germ theory works. Gravity, I've got no problem with. What is a good and bad diet? How to best raise a kid? We agree on everything, but I have this walled off delusion about Trump is secretly the president or he is about to be reinstated or whatever. That's a condition called paraphrenia that exists. It's just usually not something like the president who lost is about to be reinstated. It's not that. So as far as advice to Juan, you got to do whatever you got to do. But to me, it seems weird that the only delusional belief would be Trump is imminently going to be reinstated. Let me know what you think. On the bonus show today, we are going to be recapping the primary elections from earlier this week. We are going to talk about a man who has tested positive for monkeypox, COVID, and HIV at the same time. It's an incredible situation. And we will also talk about Dr. Anthony Fauci stepping down in December after decades of public service and Republicans claiming he's doing it to avoid prosecution. Prosecution for what, you might ask? Well, I don't have the answer, but we'll try to figure it out on the bonus show. Sign up at joinpacman.com.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house! Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song word.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
WRCT, the in sound from way out.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to...
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I renew my invitation to implore the Lord for peace for the beloved Ukrainian people who have been suffering the horror of war for 6 months. I hope that concrete steps will be taken to bring an end to the war and to avert the risk of a nuclear disaster at Zaporizhzhia.
As Pope Francis calls for peace in Ukraine after 6 months of war, we'll speak with Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute, who says the time for a settlement to end the war is now, before tens of thousands more die and Ukraine has suffered still greater harm. Then to the fight for reproductive rights as four more states, Texas, Tennessee, Idaho, and Oklahoma, enact new bans on abortion. At least one in three women in the United States have now lost access to abortion in their states since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade.
So how extreme are these MAGA Republicans? Just take a look what happened since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. In red states after red state, there's a race to pass the most restrictive abortion limitations imaginable, even without exception for rape or incest. But these MAGA Republicans won't stop there. They want a national ban.
We'll speak with the head of NARAL Pro-Choice America and with a Planned Parenthood doctor in Texas. Doctors there face life in prison and a $100,000 fine if they perform abortions. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Ukraine, the Russian-occupied Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant was cut off from the national power grid Thursday after fighting between Russian and Ukrainian forces sparked fires that destroyed a transmission line. Without a source of outside power, the plant's automated system switched to an emergency backup, a last line of defense against nuclear meltdown. Zaporizhzhia is Europe's largest nuclear power station with six reactors and thousands of tons of highly radioactive material stored on site. On Thursday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Russia's put the whole world at risk of a major nuclear disaster.
Diesel generators were immediately activated to provide energy to the station itself, to support it after the shutdown. The world must understand what a threat this is. If the diesel generators had not turned on, if the automation and our station staff had not reacted after the blackout, then we would have already been forced to overcome the consequences of the radiation accident. Russia has put Ukraine and all Europeans in a situation one step away from a radiation disaster.
The latest fighting around the nuclear plant comes as the United Nations is negotiating with Russia for access to the site. International Atomic Energy Agency Director General Rafael Grossi told France 24 television Thursday he expects a team of inspectors to reach Zaporizhzhia within days.
We need to be there. We need to be there soon. Kyiv accepts it. Moscow accepts it. We need to go. And we are going to be there hopefully very, very soon.
Is very soon days or weeks?
Days.
The United States launched a series of attacks inside Syria this week, targeting what the Pentagon described as Iranian proxies. U.S. Central Command reports that on Wednesday, U.S. helicopter gunships killed up to three, quote, suspected Iran-backed militants, unquote, after two bases housing U.S. troops in northeastern Syria came under rocket fire. A day earlier, U.S. warplanes struck near Deir Azur in the oil-rich region along Syria's eastern border with Iraq. The Pentagon says President Biden ordered the airstrikes to target fighters